going to do tonight is something a little bit slightly different. So, I thought we'd do it a bit more sort of interactive. So I'll ask some questions from time to time, and you might... Now, I have somebody in mind, of course. Maybe you might think this is a silly question, but who in the Old Testament is the most important... which man is the most important person? Obviously, God is the most important, but you know what I mean. Which man is the most important person do you think I'm thinking of?
Abraham.
No, not Abraham.
Moses.
No.
I think of Jesus. Are you? Is this a
no,
question?
No, no, Old Testament.
Yeah, no, but the Old Testament.
Oh, well, yes, I was thinking.
David.
No.
Joshua.
Ah, number four. Yeah, great. That's right. The clue's in the name. What does Joshua mean in Greek? It means Jesus.
Yeshua.
Yeah. Joshua is the Hebrew form of the Greek word Jesus, and vice versa, of course. So Jesus actually means Joshua. And I suppose his mates will probably call him Joshua or Yeshua if you're referring to him.
Just in the but it wasn't Jesus, was it?
But the word is the same thing. And so if words mean anything, and they usually do, then we may well be onto something here, the clue's in the name. Okay, well, why would I say that? So, go for the tangent now. Where is the lowest spot on the earth?
The Dead Sea.
Thank you, yes, the Dead Sea, the lowest part of the earth. Oh, I don't mean oceanic trenches, but the actual, on the surface of the earth, the lowest part of the earth is the Dead Sea. I think it's roughly 1,300 feet below sea level, or something approaching that. So, now, what you've got running, you might think this is fanciful, I'm going to save something until the end and you might be change your mind. What we've got, I want to talk about typography and topography. So, that one, just a spontaneous thing. Topography is the layout of land, you know, hills and valleys and stuff. And typography, or is the idea of something representing something else. So in Bible terms, or it could be symbolism, if you want to call it that. Symbology is the same sort of thing. This is a symbol for that. So, I'm thinking about this. First of all, let's think about what the River Jordan is. We've all got Bibles to hand. So, the River Jordan, Jordan actually means in Hebrew, sorry, in English I should say, means descender, that which descends. By their very nature, all rivers descend. I mean, it's just something they do, so it's a bit of a strange name just to represent a river. I mean, so what, you might say. Now, the Jordan River is it's quite an unusual river in that it has no outlet to the sea. It starts on the land, it runs to a sea on the land, it has no exit. It's completely self-contained. So it runs into a place called the Dead Sea. It used to be called the Salt Sea, but it's also the Dead Sea. It is a dead place where nothing much lives. In case you can't imagine it, it's in the south part, and the river runs pretty well north to south. I'm sure most people will know that. And it starts off in the north, in the mountain, we call it the Golan Heights, it's part of Syria now mainly. And what's the highest mountain in the Golan Heights? The answer is in Psalm 133. Last verse. Well, you can look it up in
Hermon.
Yeah, Mount Hermon. Psalm 133. I'll read it. Only one verse, I'm not going to read. It's only got three verses in the entire psalm, actually. So, it's a pretty short one. Let's see if you've got more psalms in this Bible. Here we are. There's a little line in it which I find quite fascinating. This is nice. Actually, I'll read the entire song because it's only very short. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head that ran down upon the beard, that is Aaron's beard, that went down to the skirts of his garments, as the dew of Hermon, and as the dew that descended upon the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore. Life forevermore. Hermon, what's the connection between life forevermore? If I'm right, and this, that the River Jordan is actually a picture for us of the descent of man into death, that is actually a picture of the life of man descending into the dead, it starts off at the beginning, Mount Hermon, life forevermore, it says at the start. Mount Hermon, of course, is, you probably don't know that, is about 9,000 feet high. And it's got snow on it all year round. In fact, there's a sort of permanent ski resort not far away. So it's actually always got snow on it. And of course, after the winter time, you've got rain. You've got snow melt, which floods the river and produces a lot of fresh water, which runs down and runs into the Jordan. Now, the Jordan, first of all, originally, it's got three basic lakes. It's got, everybody knows, it's got Galilee, and down at the bottom, there's the Dead Sea. There used to be, there still is a little bit, there used to be one called Lake Hula, which is a small lake very much to the north, 30, 40 miles to the north of Galilee. And that, when you think about how you are providing good water for people, you need a settling tank. Water is coming down off the hills. It's producing a lot of debris in it and more sediment. So the best thing you can do with the water when it first comes down to a manageable level is to let some of the sediment fall out. And so Lake Hula was like a settling tank. And then the water, the fresh water, ran into Galilee, Galilee is a beautiful freshwater lake. It thrives with lots of fish, and lots of people derive their living from it. Interestingly, in the 20th century, the powers that be decided that Lake Hula was a bit of a non-entity, really, and decided to drain it. And that actually dropped the water quality of Lake Galilee. It became less fresh, it became more sedimented and more stuff in it. So actually, to the extent that they've actually started to reinstitute Lake Hula, it's not as big as it was in ancient times, but it's bigger than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Anyway, so all this water comes out of Galilee, and there's lots of life provided for us all in Galilee. And then the water runs down, and it runs out of Galilee, and down, further down, zigzag down for, I don't know, what it would be, 60 miles or so, maybe 70 miles, down to the Dead Sea. Again, in Bible, in the 20th century, there have been lots of dams put on Jordan to use the water for irrigation, for agricultural purposes. So if you look at photographs of the River Jordan today, it doesn't look much bigger than, say, the Manchester Ship Canal or something like that. It's actually a fairly smallish thing. You wouldn't think it was particularly impressive. And of course, it rose and fell quite a lot depending on how much water was in it. But I estimated in flood, when in the springtime, when the water is starting to run off, it is estimated that at its widest, it would overflow its banks. It might be about a mile wide, and probably at its deepest, about 12 feet deep. Anyway, so where are we leading with all this? What's the connection with Joshua? Well, Joshua crossed the Jordan. He took the people of Israel across the Jordan and into the Promised Land, near to a city called opposite the lower
Jericho.
Jericho. It's the lowest city on earth, right? Mm-hmm. It's the lowest city on earth because it's right next to. It was right next to the Dead Sea before all the water, before a lot of water started getting drained off the Jordan. The Dead Sea was bigger because it was that was the repository for all the water that was being drained off. So Jericho was much closer to the coast of the Dead Sea in Bible times. So Joshua crosses the Jordan. This is no mean feat. It says it's in flood. Does anyone know what the date was that Joshua crossed the Jordan? No? Well, somebody can look it up rather than me read it. Joshua 4:19.
The 10th day of the first month.
The 10th day? Does that ring a bell for anybody? The 10th day of the first month? 10th of Nisan?
Is that the day...
How about looking at Exodus 12:3?
Yeah, when they took the lambs into their homes.
Yeah, call it Passover.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they kept them there for 4 days, didn't they? So... Did they take them in on the 10th day?
Exodus 12:3.
Is
it? Sorry, 12:3. 10th
day of this month.
You should take the lamb
this year. Yeah. Passover, is it? So, Passover, this is a miracle that God provides Joshua with. It's the same sort of miracle as crossing the Dead Sea. It's the same time of year, the same date is mentioned. No one knows exactly when Jesus rose from the dead. Oh, sorry, when Jesus was crucified. So I tried to do some research. It seems that the consensus among most Bible scholars is around 7 December. 7. Add 3 days, what do we get? Our Passover lamb was raised on the 10th of Nisan, if the consensus is true. It doesn't say that in the scriptures, but if God is God and God is keen on making sure that things fit together, I would probably, if I were a betting man, which of course Christians should be, I'd put some money on that one. Right. So what we've got now is we've got Jericho at the bottom, the river in flood. Joshua is waiting to cross. He's actually in a place which you can see why it's not translated. In the authorized version, it's called Shittim. You can get over it. A shittah tree is translated today as an acacia. It's fairly obvious reasons. So, but he's staying in this vale, which we can call, which I think I've read somewhere, some people call the Acacia Grove, which sounds a bit like Laburnum Avenue to me, but never mind. He's staying with the children of Israel in this land of acacias. Now, acacia, it's characterized by, you can actually use the wood to make stuff with. It's actually the stuff. The wood is made, the same wood the Israelites, the Levites are made, ordered to use that to make the Ark of the Covenant. I'm not quite sure how far I can push this. But the branches of the acacia are thorny. Yeah, they are actually, they have big thorns, very hard thorns. Again, we don't know what the burning bush is, except that it was a thorn bush. God appears to be in the thorn bush. What do we have twisted around Jesus' head at the crucifixion? He doesn't say, but it seems to me that there's some connection between that and that, and also the fact that Joshua is also in the midst of the thorns with the Ark of the Covenant to cross over the river. The river is stopped. It stopped miraculously. It stopped at a place about, as the crow flies, maybe 40 miles north of just the entrance to the Dead Sea. Joshua is crossing over pretty well at the widest point of the river in flood. And suddenly, the river stops flowing. What stops it flowing? Well, it could be just the water suddenly deciding to stop flowing, and the wall of water and nothing else. No one knows, it doesn't say. But it's in a place where there's a narrow gorge. If you look at the river coming down there, there's also another river called the Jabbok River, flows in from the east. And a little way south of that, the river narrows. Not just the river, but the valley itself narrows. And this is an earthquake region. It is today. Now, when you say earthquake, we don't think of San Francisco earthquake and everything all the time. They reckon that pretty well every day there's about 200 very, very micro little things which modern equipment can discern. People can't feel them. They're just like tiny little tremors. But occasionally you have what we might call earthquakes. Perhaps they're much better to be imagined as landslips. You've got high tide valley. You've got a water coming down which is likely to erode anyway. And then we're in an earthquake zone. I've got three dates here. The valley was in December 1267. There was a landslip which went into the Jordan just below the point where I'm talking about. And it was blocked for 10 hours. In 1546, the same thing happened, and it lasted for 2 days. And the last time it happened in recorded memory is 1927, when it was stopped for 21 and a half hours. So, if that is the case, then I don't see any reason why God can't just organize a landslip to block the Jordan for a fixed amount of time, until the water is back up high enough to wash the blockage away, and the water comes back down again. So all these things are not sort of implausible. They're not something which you can just say, it's just a miracle and you can just dispose of it. There's plenty of reasons why we can actually explain these things. So, to finish off with, Joshua goes across the Jordan and he's on the other side and the water starts flowing again. The people of Israel are there. There's no return. When I thought about this, I remember when I was a new Christian, I was coming down the stairs, from the attic stairs, hadn't been a Christian very long, and I had sort of been jolted out of a sort of fairly mindless atheism. And I was about 3 steps from the bottom, and if I heard a voice, I thought it. There's no going back. Once you put it yourself, there's no going back. I can't imagine how it might be possible even to go back, having effectively crossed that Jordan, where on the other side. Of course, the rest of the people, most of you will know the story about fighting the Battle of Jericho and all that sort of stuff which follows on. But basically, what we've got is this. So, you might say, okay, but everything you've said so far is sort of plausible, but I mean, you've been using your imagination. You can be pretty fanciful to do that. Joshua, in my judgment, represents Jesus. He crosses over at the gates of death, and the water is stopped further upstream. Does anybody know the name of the town that it is by that the water is blocked? The name of the town is Adam.
Sorry?
Adam.
Adam.
If the descent of the Jordan is a representation of man's life descending into sin and going down to the dead, our type of Jesus crosses over at the point of death, just in time, and he blocking the sin all the way back to Adam. And that is, for me, the clincher. I'm thinking this is actually the flow of mankind. This is a picture of mankind. And we are seeing Jesus in type giving us a presentation of what he is going to do. About 1600 years later, I can guess at it. And it is there in the scriptures. All the names fit. Everything seems to fit. It's all pretty well perfect. Anyway, I've kept you long enough on that one. It's taken me a little longer to... I can go on and on and on. You know me. Okay. So, well, I'll call it a day on that. And what we've come to pray.